Just Energy with naturopath and medical intuitive Dr. Rita Louise. We have learned from Einstein's theories that matter and energy are one. Physicists believe that all systems in nature have their own particular way of vibrating. From the swing of a pendulum to the waves in the ocean to the light that brightens the sky each day, each of these oscillates at its own unique rate. In the same way, things such as rocks and minerals vibrate very slowly and at speeds that are imperceptible to us. Living things such as plants, animals, and man vibrate faster and appear to be alive. The same holds true for every thought, feeling, event, or word we speak. Each has its own frequency or rate of vibration. What many of us don't realize is if we take everything in our own universe down to its simplest form, it is all just energy. Join Dr. Rita as she explores questions such as, what are we made of? Why do we get sick? How can I live a more balanced and whole life? Call in and talk to her and her thought-provoking guests. Send us your questions and get the help you need to move beyond any obstacle or challenges that may be affecting your life, right from the source. So stay tuned and explore your possibility.
Hello and welcome to Just Energy Radio. I'm Dr. Rita Louise and thank you all for tuning into the show today. Today, we're going to be talking to Amadea Judith about her new book, Waking the Global Heart. And I am just so thrilled and honored to have her on the show. I've been reading her book since, well, for a really long time. I'm not even going to say how long, but a really long time. And they're wonderful, wonderful, wonderful books. And this new book is right up there with the other ones. And just so excited. I have a couple of announcements, and we're going to get her online because I think we have a lot to talk about. September 9th through 12th is the 2010 Paranormal Symposium at Angel Fire in Angel Fire, New Mexico. It's going to be talking about paranormal stuff, UFO stuff. I'll be there. My good friend Jerry Pippen will be there. Some of the other people that have been on the show will be there giving lectures and presentations. Also, they have just added, as of this week, the tinfoil hat contest, and actually let me clarify that, it is the Bitsy tinfoil hat contest in memory or in honorarium of Bitsy the poodle in the tinfoil hat, who, if you go to Facebook, you will find, you'll find her, poodleinthetinfoilhat.com. Look it up, you'll find her, that's my baby, and they're having a tinfoil hat in her name. Also, September 14th in Dallas, if you're in the Dallas area, Michael Tellinger, who's been on the show, is going to be giving a presentation on his material about slave species and Adam's calendar. Also, if you are looking to get a reading or a healing, please do send me an email at rita@soulhealer.com, or you can always sign up for the Soul Healer newsletter by going to justenergyradio.com and filling out the little newsletter thing. Anyway, let me tell you a little bit about Amadea, and we're going to get her on the air. Amadea Judith, PhD, is a best-selling author and evolutionary activist whose passion is awakening humanity to its amazing potential before we throw it all away. Since her first book on the chakras became a classic, it spawned the birth of her current organization, Sacred Centers. Having spent two decades as a somatic psychotherapist working with individuals, she left her practice to teach worldwide and address the issues that affect us all. Her latest book, Waking the Global Heart, Humanity's Rite of Passage from the Love of Power to the Power of Love, charts the social evolution through our collective history. Very interesting topic. So please welcome to Just Energy Radio, Amadea Judith. Hi, Amadea. Thank you
so much
for coming on the show.
Dr. Rita, I am delighted to be here.
I am just so thrilled, honored, you know. Woo-hoo, I'm not worthy.
We get to
talk about some juicy stuff. We get to talk about some really juicy stuff because it is just so, I think your timing with this book is impeccable. I mean, I don't know if there was, you know, some undercurrent with it, but I think it really, people need to hear the information and look at the information, and we're going to get into all of that. But you're the author of a couple of different books, and the ones that I wanted to touch on a little bit before we get into talking about Waking the Global Heart are your books, Wheels of Life, and then Eastern Body, Western Mind. And one of the things that I mentioned to you before we went on air, that those books are required reading for my students at the Institute of Applied Energetics. One of the things that I've noticed in reading your books is that it seems like they have evolved, taking the concept of the chakras from one level to the next. And I was hoping we could spend some time talking about the first two books, because I really feel like they're evolving, and through their evolution, it's even going to take us into a deeper conversation of this new book.
Well, I'm really glad that you perceived that, because that's true. And I would say the evolution from Wheels of Life, my first book, that was the philosophy of the chakra system. It was, you know, introducing the West back to the chakra system again. And then Eastern Body, Western Mind applied it to our psychological development, including our, you know, childhood development through different stages that I matched up with the chakras. And as I wrote that, then I saw that that same model or the pattern of the chakras developmentally also mapped on to the culture as a whole, and that what an individual goes through in their life, if we look back through history, the culture has gone through that too. And that was lots of light bulbs for me that I hope we will get to touch upon.
I think it's interesting because even in Wheels of Life, you kind of just a little bit talk about global consciousness.
Yes,
and our evolution, you know, just a smidge.
That's right. The last chapter in Wheels of Life was the idea for Waking the Global Heart, and when I wrote that, I said, oh, this is a whole book that I was going to write sometime. But I had to do several books in between, so there are more books than just those, but we can talk about those. Those are the main ones.
Well, what other books are, I know you have other books, but I do not have the titles in hand, but what other books do you have?
Well, The Sevenfold Journey came out after Wheels of Life and before Eastern Body, Western Mind. And that I wrote, co-authored with Celine Vega, and we taught a workshop together that was one chakra each month for 9 months. We had an intro and a wrap-up. And, you know, from the notes that we were giving out for each class, we started to put it in a book. So that's kind of a workbook through the chakras. And then I did a chakra balancing workbook with Sounds True that's part audio and part workbook. And I made a little movie, The Illuminated Chakras, and I co-authored a book on contact yoga and, you know, lots of audio products and, you know, yeah, that's about it for books, yeah.
Busy girl.
Busy girl. Always.
One of the things that I loved about Wheels of Life is that it talked about the chakras on a real body level?
Yes. Well, they are in the body, although we can't, like, dissect them and hold a chakra in our hand and say, here, I just cut out this person's chakra. You know, they have locations in the body. And so it really is an embodied spirituality. And that's what I love about the chakra system, is that it integrates mind and body. It's not some spiritual system that says, all right, we're just going to leave the earth and leave our bodies and go off to some afterlife or something way up above and abstract. It says, no, we can bring the divine consciousness right down into the cells of our body and enact that here on earth. And that is really the challenge right now. Not to get up and leave, but to stay here and make changes.
It really is challenging right now for a lot of people. You know, I was going to ask this question later, but you kind of opened the door a little bit. With this new book in particular, how much do you think it relates to what's going on with the whole 2012 thing?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, it might, without talking a little bit more about the book, this might not make so much sense. But what I see, what I talked about in the book is the rise and fall of different eras through history and what their dominant themes were and how they've actually gone through the chakras. And so at the height of one era is the beginning of another. And there's a point where the new one is growing and the old one is falling, and there's a point where they cross. Now, this has happened several times. I see 2012 as the place where the paradigm that we've been living in for the last 5,000 years, which I call the love of power, or the third chakra paradigm, is already declining. It started declining at World War II when we had such massive, horrible deaths in the, you know, the bomb of Nagasaki and Hiroshima. And, you know, that was the beginning of its decline, although it was at such a power we hardly noticed it. And at the same time, something new was being born. You know, shortly after that in the 60s was the interest in yoga and meditation and consciousness and, you know, just a huge spiritual revolution. And so that was started on the fringe, but it's been growing. So as the mainstream model starts to decay, what I see 2012 is just the point where those two lines cross on the graph. And the day before and the day after are not going to be so very different, but it's where the new paradigm starts to hit critical mass. And then things move much faster.
Because
and it becomes apparent that the old paradigm is on its way out to the majority of people.
That sounds
Some people
good.
See that already, and some people are just holding on for dear life to the old paradigm.
Well, I think that the old paradigm is just creating, or people holding on to the old paradigm is creating a lot of the issues that people are experiencing right now anyway.
Yeah, yeah, and the political strife and the, you know, I mean, it's just people are finding that it doesn't work. And we need to create something new, and that is indeed happening. And what I try to talk about in the book is, you know, what is the old paradigm? What are its beliefs? What are its structures? How did we come to those beliefs? And what is the new paradigm and how that's been growing all along underneath the radar and is now really going to take precedence and proving that it actually works better.
Okay.
So many people are, you know, discouraged about where we are in the world. Oh, my God, you know, doomsday. And what I see is that it's just the death of the old, but underneath it is something very bright and beautiful being born that is very underreported in the news. And that there's much hope, much to be hopeful for, and a lot of difficulty to face and solve, and difficulties already happening. I mean, look at Pakistan, you know, 20 million people homeless. You know, there's parts of the world that are in extreme crisis right now. And that crisis is an awakening.
Very much so. I think that as humans, we need that, like, subtle, you know, whack up the side of our head to kind of move ourselves forward and get out of our own way.
Yep, yep. That's unfortunately true, you know, that people tend not to make big changes until they absolutely have to. But there's many people that are not at the point of having to, but they are at the point of seeing a better way. So there's a lot of leaders and shapers and social architects and evolutionary activists that are really looking at the big picture and looking at how it needs to change.
In your opinion, okay, and I'm phrasing it definitely that way, do you think it's going to end up coming to grips where the power struggle is just going to be so intense that there's going to be, I'm going to say anarchy in the United States or around the world, because there's just so much going on and so many people homeless, you know, having all of these problems that really aren't being helped or taken care of, that need help?
Yeah, well, what I see is that the political strife and the, you know, sort of adolescent level of the political dialogue right now and the news reporting is going, it gets people disgusted. And it gets people losing faith in the government's ability to solve anything that's important. And what's happening is that burden of responsibility is actually shifting to the people. And as government continues to fail to, you know, protect the economy, protect the natural world, to protect jobs, to keep the peace and keep us from spending so much money that we don't need to spend on useless and pointless wars. As the government continues to do those things, as it has for a long time, people are going into non-governmental organizations to address issues of social justice, peace, environmental sustainability, study of democracy, study of consciousness. More and more people are just saying, I'm not going to put my energy into that. I'm going to go out and join Greenpeace or World Wildlife Fund or, there's Praxis Peace. Or there's a number of organizations. There's probably 2 million of them that Paul Hawken has documented on his website, wiserearth.org. And so, you know, what Paul says is that this is the largest movement on the planet today. The movement of people taking the power into their own hands and, you know, getting disgusted and saying, I'm going to do something about this because I care, because I can. And they're doing it of their own free will, really out of the love of their hearts to do something that serves and to do something that saves what they love. So they're really coming from the heart because they have free will. Now, people that don't have free will don't have the capacity to do that. So that's part of the paradigm shift.
Right. I think there are so many people that just feel powerless.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I know that on an individual, personal basis, when we feel powerless, you know, I know with my clients, you know, I encourage them to refine their power, that they will become more of themselves and own themselves better if they find their power. And it seems like, you know, individually and as part of our society, that's something that we need to do and need to nurture within ourselves.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the thing about the powerless cannot be responsible, because responsible is having the ability to respond. And if you're powerless, you don't have the ability to respond. And so what we see in the world is a lot of, you know, rampant irresponsibility. And really that is because people don't feel empowered and say, well, how can I be responsible for this? So the more we empower people, and that empowerment is happening, the tools of power that used to be only in the hands of an elite few are now in the hands of common people. Anybody can publish, anybody can put a movie up on YouTube, anybody can make a CD, anybody can write a blog, anybody can, you know, put up a website. Anybody can, you know, pretty much fly where they want if they can afford it, drive where they want. There's a freedom and an empowerment that the common people have that has never been before in history. And these tools are enabling people to network and inform each other and educate each other and strategize and empower each other.
That's a great point. I didn't think about the use of communication. You know, I just when I look at that whole thing, it's like, well, when are people going to take a stand and do something as opposed to waiting for somebody to do something? But there, but when you look at it from, you know, put up a blog, make a video, there is a ton of people. Putting, I guess there's a lot of opinion and not a lot of action. I guess maybe that's what I'm seeing.
Mm-hmm. Well, the action is underreported. There's actually a lot of it going on. And it's under the radar because the mainstream media is still caught in the old story. And they think news comes from telling, you know, two conflicting sides of a story because people get attracted to conflict. And that's actually true. People get attracted to conflict, but then they get stuck in it. And, you know, having people of the most divergent views on a talk show does not really educate the public. It just creates a conflict, right? The public really needs facts. They really need the truth to awaken.
Well, but it seems like the media only puts out spin.
That's right, because they've learned that it sells, and, you know, the media has been bought out by, you know, certain political factions that have their own story and their own, you know, they're really part of the old story. But we've all been part of the old story. There's no point demonizing, you know, what has been. It was, you know, it's sort of like the parent-child, you know, in a family, a parent needs to be in control of children that are 3 and 4 and 7 years old, you know, because they don't know much about the world. But when the child becomes an adolescent and is starting to have their own information and drive a car and all that, then the paradigm between the parent and child needs to shift.
And the parent
and
needs to let go.
Yeah, yeah. So we had a power over paradigm back when most people were illiterate and we had master-slave relationships and society was civilization was very young, and those who had power and a clear vision took that power and told other people what to do, because that was the only way to coordinate a civilization that was expanding exponentially in population of people that, you know, they didn't have anything that we have for granted for today. I mean, they didn't know how to read and write. They didn't know much about diseases. They didn't have any technology. They didn't have fax machines or telephones or cars. You know, it was a very different world. And, you know, cities of 50,000 people living together under these conditions, somebody had to be a strong man and, you know, like a parent of a family of young children, and take control and, you know, keep it from that anarchy or chaos. And so that was how we began. But now we've been growing up all this time. Now we can read and write. Now we have the Internet to give us information on any subject whatsoever. Now we have cell phones with which we can organize. You know, we are an informed and, you know, growing up population, and that old paradigm just doesn't work anymore because it disempowers people who are ready to become adults and take power and take responsibility.
I mean, you know, what we're talking about is change. Why do you think we are in so much resistance to changing?
Well, I talk about this a bit in the book, too, that these chakra ages, and let's just go over them a little bit so we catch the reader up, because I think we're kind of starting in the middle here and
okay.
Someone might be lost.
Okay.
Is that the first chakra, and chakras are energy centers in the body from the yoga tradition. The first chakra is at the base of the spine, and it relates to the element earth and to the consciousness level of survival instincts. So in a person, this is their, you know, knee-jerk reaction to sweat when they're hot and shiver when they're cold and be hungry when they haven't eaten and be tired when they haven't slept and, you know, keep their body alive and know how to run from a, you know, hungry tiger. In the culture, this survival first chakra was our infancy, our birth from the womb of nature. And this would go back to the Paleolithic period, which is like 8,000 to 10,000 years ago, the upper Paleolithic, the more recent one. And, I mean, even back before that, that we started, our first challenge as a species was to survive. Can we survive in nature? Can we keep ourselves going? Can we procreate and, you know, live a life long enough to learn something and pass it on to our children? And so, indeed, we did survive, and we were hunter-gatherers and lived close to the earth, which is the element of first chakra. The second chakra is related to the element water. In the body, it's in the abdomen and relates to the hips and sacrum and genitals and sexuality and procreation and our emotions. And so that's the individual stage. And for the culture, we came to the water chakra when we began to farm, which means we controlled water for agriculture, and we could put seeds in the ground, and instead of roaming across the earth as hunter-gatherers, we could stay in one place, and we could build houses and temples, and, you know, we could start to really build a more complex society than you can with a roving band of nomads. So that took us into the second chakra phase, in which we did a lot of procreating. And population expanded exponentially, and, you know, all of a sudden there were a whole lot more people than we had the structure to organize. You know, people had never lived in groups that large, 50,000 people living in one city. And so, you know, we had to have a new organizing principle. Now, each of these I coordinate to kind of Jungian masculine and feminine archetypes. So the first two were really the static feminine, which is like the period a child is in when they are focused on the mother. They breastfeed, and the mother is the prime caretaker, and that child can't go too far from the mother's sight and still survive. And then the child comes into the terrible twos, and they rebel against the parents. So the third chakra phase became a rebellion against the feminine. And I call that the static masculine. The dynamic masculine. It overthrew the old goddess cultures violently and established a new order in which everything was opposite to what had been. So where the body and the earth had been sacred, the body and the earth were denigrated, and now it said the mind and heaven is where it's at. That's the only thing that's real. And so everything was turned on its head in order to give it another polarity. Now I'm getting to your question, I really am. So once the dynamic masculine seizes control, then its next job is to keep that control. And that becomes the static masculine. And that is the institution of law and order as a way to keep people regulated. That's what we've been in pretty much since the Greeks and certainly all through Christianity. So when you say, why is there so much resistance, back to your question now, I'm getting around to it, is because the static masculine, by definition, has had to be static and hold on. It's had to be rigid. It's had to hold to the rules because that is what organized society. For instance, in the Roman Empire, when many different cultures were coming together in this huge melting pot with different languages and different gods and different customs, the Romans, who were good at law, had a way of regulating all these differences. It was kind of brutal, but it worked and created a fairly stable empire for about 600 years. So this static masculine has, by definition, had the job of holding on. And it's actually holding society together. You asked earlier if we're going to go into anarchy. I don't think so, because I think while we are watching the corruption of this old model, something new is forming. And when the new paradigm that's forming is mature enough to hold society together, then the old one can let go. And it won't happen until. And so their job is
December 21st, 2012.
Yeah, well, it's a process. It's not.
That's a joke. That's a joke.
Yeah.
I keep joking around that I am going to spend December 21st in New Orleans just in case.
Oh, good. That's a great place to go.
It's one of those damned if you do, damned if you don't places. And so
yeah,
I was like, well,
yeah,
you know, if it's going to all go, at least I can have a drink. you know, we were talking a little bit about the media, and I'd like to just kind of follow up on that. I find it interesting that the media just really likes to keep us in fear.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, is that part of that whole male energy?
Well, I don't know, but it's part of the survival instinct that is very primitive in the brain. You know, we have our reptilian brain, which is our survival orientation. We have our mammalian brain, which is our emotional orientation. Then we have the cerebral cortex that enables us to think. And the fear actually puts people in their sort of reptilian lower brain stem, their lower chakras, in which they react instinctively rather than think. And if people really think and consider the facts, they're going to make very different decisions. People are voting emotionally and instinctually, and keeping them in fear, you know, it makes them very interested in the news, and, oh, my God, there's terrorists coming, and we got to watch the news. And, you know, it's a way to control people and to control, make people in a lower, like I say, a lower state of consciousness so they're more easily manipulated. And we have to grow up and see that for what it is and learn to think for ourselves. That's part of the challenge of growing up.
Well, the music's going to come up here in just one second, and
okay.
I'll give you a heads up. There was a quote in the book, and I'll repeat it after the break. Scared is what happens when sacred gets scrambled, which I love.
Yeah,
let's talk a little bit more about that because it seems like it fits. I'm Dr. Rita Louise. We're talking to And Odeya Judith about her book, Waking the Global Heart, and we'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Just Energy Radio with your host, Dr. Rita Louise, will return right after these messages.
Sensitive to energy? Want to explore the world beyond the five senses? Looking for a new career as an alternative healthcare practitioner? Then the Institute of Applied Energetics, Medical Intuition, and Energy Medicine Training Programs may be right for you. Our comprehensive curriculum provides students with a deep understanding of how to detect, evaluate, and transform the subtle body, as well as techniques for correcting energetic imbalances that may underscore a person's ability to experience radiant health. So if you are sensitive to energy, contact the Institute of Applied Energetics right away. Be a catalyst for changing the way healthcare is done around the world. Visit www.appliedenergeticsinstitute.com and start your new career today. How would you like to live long and enjoy great health? How about creating solid bones and whiter teeth? Strengthen your heart and eyes and have radiant, youthful-looking skin. There is an ancient health and longevity secret that has been used for millennia in Egypt, India, and China that can help you achieve this. For the first time in the modern world, Pearlseum brings this ancient wellness secret to you. For more information about Pearlseum, visit www.productsforthesoul.com. Before we get back to the show, I would like to thank all of you for tuning into Just Energy Radio. Many of the people I've helped over the years were listeners just like you. If you're at a junction in your life, don't stand alone at this important time. Call me or send me an email. We can set up a private consultation so that you too can experience health, healing, and wholeness in your life. To find out more about the services I offer, visit www.soulhealer.com.
Now back to Just Energy Radio with Dr. Rita Louise.
Hello and welcome back to Just Energy Radio. I'm Dr. Rita Louise. And before we bring Anadea back on, I want to give the answer to last week's mind yoga question. And don't forget, we're going to have a new mind yoga question later in the show. So the question was, what is the name of the small metallic spheres and colorful balls of light that were repeatedly spotted on and occasionally photographed by military air crews around the world during World War II? And the answer is Foo Fighters. And the winner of The Unknown Universe by Richard Hammond, Ph.D., is Jane Swarthy. So, Jane, congratulations. And for those listening, don't forget, later on in the show, we're going to be having a new mind yoga question. And this week, the winner will get a copy of Dr. Shaw's book, Soul Communication, Opening Your Spiritual Channels for Success and Fulfillment. So let's get Anadea back on. And let's see what you have to say. So one of the quotes that, or something that I'm quoting out of the book, which just really touched me, was, scared is what happens when sacred gets scrambled. Could you talk about that a little bit? Because I think it really fits with the whole concept we're talking about right now.
Well, we've really lost the concept of what's sacred in this world. So first we have to go back to what that is. That, you know, a long time ago there were sacred traditions that had been practiced for millennia. You know, I mean, practiced for, you know, hundreds and thousands, sometimes thousands of years, that were designed to keep humans in balance with nature. You know, they worshiped the seasons of summer and winter and spring and fall and the harvest because we were an agricultural community. And people lived in harmony with nature through these rituals, through this, you know, sense of these aspects of the earth and the way we treat it and the way we live. These were sacred principles. Now, sacred is something that when you lose it, you lose like the seed to make something essential. You know, so if you had you know, only one seed left of something and, you know, you needed to grow a crop, that seed would be pretty sacred, right? So these sacred principles designed to keep us in harmony, they were violently overthrown. And what that created was a tremendous amount of upheaval, nature kind of going crazy, and then next thing you know, people are sacrificing animals to the gods to try to make it rain and try to get things back in harmony. And through that sacrifice of the sacred, people became very scared. And then we can be ruled by fear. And, you know, it's something I sort of discovered because my business is Sacred Centers and typing it all the time. Every once in a while I mistype it, and I type it Scared Centers. And I went, scared is what happens when the sacred gets scrambled. And then I realized it really has quite the meaning, you know, for our day. And we need to get back to sacred principles once again because they are the way we align with the divine, with nature, with the health of our bodies, with what's true and right. That's what those sacred traditions were designed to teach us. We wipe them out, we don't have our compass anymore. We get lost.
Were these traditions part of that first chakra origin that we had when we were living in the goddess culture?
They were. They came out of that, but of course, like everything, they evolved and matured over time. So back in the Paleolithic and the first chakra, when we were living in survival, you know, it was basically the mother goddess who was a pregnant-bellied, large-breasted figurine of which thousands and thousands were found all over old Europe. And then when we come into the Neolithic, it became much more sophisticated, and then it was both gods and goddesses, mothers and fathers and sisters and brothers, and there was a god of the sun and a mother of the earth and a, you know, grandmother mountain, and you know, everything alive was seen as divine and having something that we can actually relate to as a relationship. So you know, when you relate to something, you value it. You know, it's like you wouldn't kill your cat for dinner, you know, but you might buy meat at the grocery store because you don't have a relationship to that. So when we have a relationship to something, it becomes more sacred. And when we break that sacredness, we break the relationship, we spin out of control. And that's what's happened. We've lost our sacred traditions of, you know, and it's not just goddess. It was really a whole complex mythology of that, you know, spoke to the human psyche and spoke to the natural world and showed where they met and how they got along and how they put it together.
I had a question, and then I looked down at my paper, and now I totally spaced.
That's okay. You can take a breath. Now, one of my goals in life and in my work is to restore a sense of the sacred, and so that's always brought into all my workshops. It's brought into everything we do, even at Sacred Centers here when we have a business meeting. You know, we stop and we take a breath together and we center and we remember our highest self. And, you know, we do some, even if only a little 2-minute ceremony or a meditation, just to realize that sacred work is deep and profound. And that's what we really want to be about, the sacred work that connects everything and brings wholeness again.
I mean, I think there are things in society today that people see as being sacred. Maybe I should put quotation marks around those. But we're not really talking, I mean, you know, like the sacred dollar, my sacred Mercedes-Benz. But we're really not talking about that kind of thing. We're talking about something that's much deeper and much more personal to us.
Yes, much deeper and much more profound. But when the dollar becomes sacred or the Mercedes becomes sacred, that is a substitute because people don't have the real traditions anymore. And so they go to substitutes, and then the dollar becomes, you know, the dollar is just a representation of the material world. And the material world was once the province of the goddess. And so when we wipe that out and denigrated it, we get its shadow side, which is materialism. It's no longer sacred, it's just greedy. So when we restore our relationship to the earth as something sacred, then that replaces, that counteracts the materialism.
with the amount of people that are on the planet, do you think it's possible for us to recreate that relationship? Obviously, we can't, I'm going to say, all farm again, even though during the Paleolithic, they were hunter-gatherers, and so that dynamic is going to be different.
Yeah, I think that that's true. You know, it's like we're not going to go back to infancy and breastfeed on the mother, you know. You're not going to do that in your adult life, and it you shouldn't. So I don't think it's about going back to a primitive state at all. I think we can restore the importance of nature. We can protect the national parks. We can protect endangered species. We can protect the climate from destroying, you know, the balance of life as we know it. We can, you know, protect overfishing of the oceans. I mean, there's many, many things we can do, even with the number of people we have, by, you know, sending this out into the airwaves and making it, you know, as important as, you know, building churches was 2,000 years ago, until it becomes an essential part of life. And, you know, can we? Well, it's essentially necessary that we do. So we better. We better find a way to do it. Or
it's
we'll destroy the biosphere and... Pardon?
No, go ahead.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Oh, I said, or we'll destroy the biosphere, which will eventually destroy us.
Or just run out of natural resources or resources
in
general.
That's right.
And
that's right.
Be screwed. And it's almost like taking on a parental role for the mother, the, you know, the goddess, for the earth, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I would say it's taking on a partnership role. You know, the planet is the senior partner. There's no doubt about that. We're not going to be the parent of the planet. But we can work in partnership with it. And, you know, for instance, people are discovering that when they mimic nature, they come up with technologies that work better, whether it's, you know, biomimicry in women's hormones, or whether it's, you know, fashioning the way systems work in a corporation to fashion after how nature and ecosystems work, you know, that nature is the model that was here long before we started doing things differently. And, you know, there's a way, if you look at nature, to do most everything. Now, that doesn't mean that technology is bad or wrong. We wouldn't be having this conversation if it weren't for technology. So, we came away from nature in order to develop the technology, but now that we have it, we need to make a partnership between nature and technology. So when we talk about, you know, green technology, that's exactly what we're doing. Instead of dominating nature, we're being partners with it. And that is a sacred partnership.
You know, there's the whole global warming thing, man. I want to go into a whole conversation about global warming. And then there's the whole commentary. Is there global warming? Isn't there global warming? No one seems to know. It depends on who you talk to, whatever. My belief is, or what I feel, which is I think very much in line with what you're saying, is that regardless of the scare tactic of global warming, we need to start looking at what we're doing to the planet and start taking responsibility for our role in it.
Absolutely. And that's part of maturing. That is part of growing up and moving from adolescence to adulthood, that we take responsibility for what we're doing to the planet. And, you know, and global warming is the perfect problem to force global cooperation. You know, these problems are evolutionary drivers that can only be solved. You know, having a war always united a people. Oh, well, if we have a common enemy, then, you know, we are united. And that's the old paradigm. But if we have a common problem that isn't something to drop bombs on, but something to solve, that can also unite the people. So global warming is actually the perfect problem. The trouble is, you know, it's very serious. And, you know, scientists by nature disagree with each other. But there has never been a scientific matter that has had so much agreement among top scientists as the fact that global warming exists. And, you know, it is, I mean, we have the, you know, in the last 10 years have been the hottest years on record. We have, you know, record heat in Russia right now and the fires that are destroying the wheat crop. And, you know, every time the the temperature goes up 1 degree Celsius, the production of wheat goes down by 10%. So if we go up 5 degrees, we've got half as much wheat and twice as many people to feed. We're going to have world famine. So, you know, global warming is an extremely serious problem to deal with, and it's also the perfect problem to force humans to work cooperatively together, because that's the only way it's going to be solved. But there's never been a scientific issue that has had so much agreement.
On the other side, a change in 5 degrees of temperature put us into the ice age. And so if you have 5 degrees of more heat, you know, although I did hear this on talk radio one day where they said, well, not having so much snow in Minnesota, that's not a bad thing.
Right. Well, that's
oh, my God, that's just scary.
Yeah, well, that's just people looking at their own lives and not looking at the global picture. And, you know, but when they find out that they, you know, have snow on the ground and they can't buy any bread because the wheat crop is so diminished that it doesn't grow anymore, you know, wheat, corn, and rice, which are the three main staple foods for the world, the hotter it gets, the less their returns, the less, you know, the lower the crop yield. And so as we get more people who are hungrier and we get hotter and we have, you know, lower crop yields, then we have a very serious problem feeding people. And those people in Minnesota are going to discover, oh, I can't buy bread.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't buy meat because there's no grain to feed the cows. And I, you know, so there's, you know, we're going to be forced into realizing that we're a global system.
It's that resistance at work.
Yeah, yeah. Well, systems naturally resist change. And they resist the elements that will bring the most change.
And especially, you know, what you're talking about is that we have been in this whole power thing. And I'd really like to kind of go through this whole power phase, because the reality is it's probably the best documented, you know, the Paleolithic and then the early Neolithic, where you were talking about the husbands and the male and female husbands and wives, there were people, there's some stuff that they found, but it's really when we move into the later phase, when we move into the third chakra energy, that we have documentation and we can actually look back and go, oh, yeah, this happened, and oh, yeah, that happened.
Right. That was the beginning
of history. And I think that journey is fascinating. We like ancient mysteries on the show. All right, I like ancient mysteries. And so that just kind of like fit into my whole like, I'm liking this.
Uh-huh.
But I think it's just that journey that we've been through has been fascinating.
Uh-huh.
So maybe we could, I mean, even if you want to backtrack and kind of start, you know, a little bit back with the Paleolithic, going back to the goddess culture and bringing us up to speed to where we hit recorded history and we actually have moved into that third chakra energy.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's no surprise that it's called history, which is his story, because around the time of the beginning of writing, that coincided with the beginning of the overthrow of the goddess cultures. And so from that point on, you know, society was ruled by men, and what was written was his story. And the goddess is pretty much wiped from the record. You know, it's only by recent archaeological digs that people have found the statues and the evidence that people once worshipped a goddess. And through, you know, in the Renaissance, there was a rediscovery of the literature of antiquity from the Greeks and before that, you know, had the old pagan rituals and understanding. It was that rediscovery that actually gave birth to the Renaissance in a very dark period of time. So this has been pretty much wiped from the mainstream conscious record and is only now being rediscovered. And, you know, we're not going to go to the future without a balance between masculine and feminine. And it's not that men are wrong or bad for what they've done. They give us marvelous technology and a world full of things. But, you know, men have things and women have places, and men have given us wonderful things and they've trashed the place. And so if we're going to go to the future and we're going to go to a paradigm of love, then we have to balance the two main archetypes of society, which is masculine and feminine. And they're way out of balance right now. We're not going to have peace and true creativity or even birth of what's new without a balance between masculine and feminine.
And so we started out in a female energy culture, but I would assume that during that culture, men had their role and it wasn't, they weren't suppressed in the way that they are now.
Exactly. They weren't suppressed. You know, women were gatherers and men were hunters. And, you know, women were about the cycles of nature and men were about the planting and the animal husbandry. So there was always sacred roles for both men and women to play. But when the, you know, herding cultures came down from the more desert areas and they weren't farmers and they didn't understand that part, they didn't have respect for the women's role and they started overthrowing it and instituting their own gods. And at that point, that's when we lost some of these sacred traditions. And we lost sacred roles for women.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the next phase of the masculine being in power. And we can say, well, this was good, this was bad, but, you know, with those bad boys, how did they do it to us? But I think that's really pointless. It happened. And it happened the way it happened in order to create another pole from the earth to the heaven, from the feminine to the masculine. We needed to sort of divide in order to go to the other side. But now, you know, we went from thesis to its antithesis. And now we need to go to a higher synthesis, bringing the old and the new together at a higher level. And that's the paradigm of the heart.
And I think, you know, recreating that balance is starting to happen. One of the things that I tell people is that I'm not even going to say the generation before me. I'm going to say women that were born 10 years prior to me, 15 years prior to me, were, I'll just say it, they were women's libbers and they were bra burners and they fought to have equality. And when you talk with them, you know, they still, there's this piece of not being equal or not expecting equality and having to fight for it.
Mm-hmm.
And having grown up with those women paving that path, I mean, I've worked in a very male-dominated field for
mm-hmm.
years, and I had the expectation of being treated equal. And I can't even imagine what it's like for young women today where, you know, we're talking a lot of years since that point in time.
Right, right. And the inequalities are on so many levels, some of them very, very subtle and some of them very obvious. But, you know, even saying that, you know, women have to do the same thing in men, only they have to do it in high heels and pantyhose while being a single mother and working two jobs. You know, I mean, it's just there are so many inequalities that it will, you know, continue to take generations to work it out. But what I see is, you know, in the 60s we had women's liberation where women started to wake up, and that was really an important time. But what, you know, what I talk about less is about, is more about is that, hey guys, there's something missing at the table. You know, the feminine is missing, and until it is shored up to be equal, you're not playing with a full deck. And we cannot solve the problems without playing with a full deck. And, you know, so look at what's missing. Look at how beauty is missing from the way we build our cities. Look at how nurturance is missing. Look at how quiet is missing. Look at how, you know, the emphasis on love is missing and families are falling apart. And all the things that women, you know, used to be responsible for or connected with, those things are what's fraying in society. And it's like the women are the water and the men are the fire. Well, the fire is going out of control because there's not enough water to put it out. And it's going to burn up the planet if we don't bring up the water, you know, if we don't bring up the feminine element to balance. And that's not a pretty picture, but it's a reality.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. And then there's the whole area of feelings.
Absolutely.
There are so many people that are not in touch with their feelings, don't know what they are, don't know what they want, are so disconnected with their inner selves.
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought that up because that's an important element. That's feelings are associated with second chakra, and second chakra got totally repressed in the masculine paradigm. And, you know, again, we don't have to blame the guys for this. Imagine that, you know, the men get taken away from their wives and their children and their homestead to go off to war, and they're sleeping on hard ground for months and at a time, facing danger every day, and often not having enough to eat, being controlled by their commander. I mean, it was a pretty tough life. And, you know, if they felt anything about it, like, oh, I miss my wife and my kid, or I'm kind of scared to go into battle, I mean, that was horrible for the army, right? The army has to be united in one mind in order to go forward into battle. They don't want these guys to say, hey, I don't think this is such a good idea to invade this town. So it really became absolutely forbidden for men to have their feelings. And that spilled out over culture as a whole. And it was the only way they could tolerate doing the things to themselves and to other people that they were actually forced to do by the powers that be. Women could still have their feelings. We stayed at home and raised the kids. And so as the generations went by and the masculine became more dominant, the whole realm of feelings, even for women, was sort of made inferior. Oh, pull yourself together. You shouldn't be feeling that much, you know. Don't, if somebody cries, they're losing it, you know. So there's this denigration of the feeling realm when actually the feeling realm keeps us in touch. And without the feeling realm, we've lost pleasure. And without pleasure, we've lost a compass for the body to stay healthy. And we have, you know, healthcare crises and, you know, rampant sickness everywhere and people that aren't unhappy and hundreds of millions of people taking antidepressants and not paying attention to how things feel. Do what you're told. Do what the rules are. I don't care how it feels. And that puts us out of touch with ourselves, out of touch with each other. And it's a huge damage to the human psyche and to an element that was given us as a compass to stay in touch. That's my little wrap on feelings.
That's a good little wrap.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people, just kind of on a little side conversation, that, you know, because you're talking about feelings, and there are a lot of people that make the choice to not make a change, to not quit a job, to not end a relationship, et cetera, you know, to listen to the feelings that they're happening because they get scared, which kind of goes back to the other conversation that we were having. Anyway, question for you.
Yeah.
I was just, this just came to me a little bit earlier, but I think I want to ask this here. What, as you know, because I'd be preaching to the choir here, that the first chakra is associated with the adrenals, and then the third chakra is also associated with the adrenals.
Right.
Could there be why there's such a strong connection between the first and third chakra is because they're both addressing the same organ?
In some ways. I mean, the thing about, you know, when you are put in a survival response, your adrenal glands kick in, which is why I associate the adrenals with first chakra, because survival, you know, somebody pulls out a gun, you know, and points it at you in a dark alley, your adrenals are just going to shoot adrenaline and norepinephrine and different things into your body, so, or epinephrine. And so what that does, though, is it prepares you for action. And action is third chakra. So the survival instinct comes up. Your body floods with these stress hormones, cortisol and other things, and then you are ready for action. So that's a relationship between the first chakra and the third. One is the instinct, and the other is the enactment of that instinct.
Or choice to not enact that instinct.
And when we deny first chakra, we have an overactive third chakra.
We need to take another quick break.
Okay.
I'm Dr. Rita Louise. We're talking to Anadeya Judith about her book, Waking the Global Heart. Do check out her webpage, sacredcenters.com, and we'll be back with Anadeya after these words from our sponsors.
Thank you.
Radio with your host, Dr. Rita Louise, will return right after these messages.
Balance in all things is critical to maintaining health. In the hectic drive of today's world, many of us forget to take care of our most important asset, ourselves. At productforthesoul.com, we want to support your effort to nurture yourself. We offer a wide variety of herbs, supplements, and high-quality, ready-to-eat, all-natural foods. We even offer holographic chip technology products that can augment the body's natural ability to increase energy, improve sleep, and mitigate pain. Best of all of our products are delivered straight to your door. It's time to start loving yourself. Visit productsforthesoul.com and let us help you along the way. Journey to the dark side of the spirit world and meet the bad kids on the block in Dark Angels, an insider's guide to ghosts, spirits, and attached entities. Who are these bad kids? As a child, you might have met one at night, under your bed, in your closet, or down a dark hallway. Dark Angels is an adult dissertation about ghosts. It's filled with revealing information about how these dark forces can influence our lives. Order your copy of Dark Angels today. Visit www.darkangelsbook.com for more information.
Move past the crossroads in your life and discover alternative solutions to your deepest concerns at soulhealer.com. So whether it's a physical problem, an emotional issue, a question about work, or troubles in your relationship, naturopath and medical intuitive Dr. Rita Louise can help you. Bring peace, harmony, and health back into your life. Schedule a session today. Visit soulhealer.com right away and live the life you've been dreaming of.
Now back to Just Energy Radio with Dr. Rita Louise.
Hello and welcome back to Just Energy Radio. I'm Dr. Rita Louise and thank you for staying tuned to the second hour of the show. If you've been joining the programming today, please do mark it as a favorite. And we're still here with Anadea Judith talking about her new book, Waking the Global Heart. We've been talking about the third chakra and the use of power, or our use of power. Can you kind of walk us through our transition from that goddess society in through the third chakra energy? Because it has grown and built and changed and shifted and transmuted into so many different things, even though it's all been kind of the same.
Yeah, exactly. And it's such a complex period of history. So, you know, the overthrow of the goddess culture started, some of the first ones were around 4400 BC, the overthrow. And in successive movements over 1,000 years, some of those old peaceful agrarian cultures were overthrown. And, you know, by the beginning of history, around 3000 BC, give or take a few hundred years, it was pretty much a male-dominated culture. And as we grew and came into skirmishes because, you know, a tribe grew and the land it was on, they spread out, and then they bumped into somebody else on another piece of land and said, hey, that's mine. No, that's mine. And they picked up their swords and fought over it. We started to become militarized. And you could say that it only took a village getting wiped out once for the men of the village to say, hey, we're not going to let that happen to our wives and our children. We're going to train. We're going to build more spears. We're going to train our sons how to fight. We're going to be ready next time. In fact, we're going to go out and practice. And so we gradually became militarized as a society, in which the military has a single-pointed focus because the commander keeps everybody the same. Even in our military today, what happens when a man enters? You know, they shave his head and he gets a uniform like everybody else, and he has to conform, and any nonconformity is not tolerated. So that was the beginning of some of our power struggles. You could say we went from our infancy to our toddlerhood to sibling rivalry. And the funny thing that happened with that I think most people don't really notice or talk about, is that in order to protect ourselves, we built walls around the cities. And people, especially women, had to stay within those walls. In Greek and Roman society, many women, even high elite women, could not go outside, and they certainly couldn't go outside the walls unescorted. And so what happened to consciousness is that we became more interested and involved with what happened within those walls, and we walled out nature at the same time. So nature became less and less important. The goddess cultures receded into the past, and the masculine became the norm, and people didn't even question it. When Christianity came along, originally Christ was really, I see, an avatar of the heart chakra, as was Buddha, who preached compassion, and Christ preached forgiveness, and the heaven of, heaven can be on earth, and we are divine, and all the things of the heart chakra. But we were steeped in a third chakra modality. We were steeped in a third chakra organizing principle for society, because still not that many people could read or write, and we didn't have the printing press yet, and so we were still organized by the powerful top-down power over, where the majority of people are taught to submit. So Christ's message of the heart got usurped by the third chakra paradigm. And then it became instituted as a state religion, and, people were even killed for mentioning the goddess's name. So the old temples were destroyed, the statues were destroyed, people were killed for practicing the old ways, until they no longer came up in consciousness, because that went on for 1,000 years. And, a little bit of it revived in the Renaissance, but it was pretty short-lived. And then we went into the Industrial Revolution and the Enlightenment period of science. And that was all occurring within the masculine paradigm, within, the paradigm of the Roman Empire. So the Industrial Revolution is, this person's in charge of the factory, they tell everybody what to do, and everybody goes to work and becomes a cog in the machine to produce goods that produce more and more, faster and faster, because population is expanding. And, what we do is we lose our soul, we lose the sacred, and we become a machine-like organism, and machines are dominating the planet. So it's out of balance. And so this is, the different iterations of this power paradigm. And it's not that industry is wrong or machines are wrong, but when they are used to dominate rather than be in partnership, then they cause great problems that will, create starvation and global warming and all sorts of problems that we have to deal with. So that's sort of a quick 5,000-year pass-through of the power era.
What do you think spurred us on to evolve? Was there something inside of us that brought this about? And I'm bringing it up because I've had Barbara Hanclow on here several times. I'm sure you know who Barbara is.
Oh, sure.
In her book, Catastrophobia, she talks about how the flood, like the Noah's Ark flood, actually created a change in people because now they were under fear and they were put into a survival space. Now they had issues because they thought they were going to die, and it just changed the mentality of where people were coming from. They weren't able to relax. You know, they had issues in their first chakra that were passed down generation to generation.
Sure.
What do you think of that, or do you think that this was something that was going to happen regardless?
Well, you know, it's hard to say how the evolutionary trajectory, you know, how the evolutionary thrust unfolds. You know, whether it had to happen that way or not. I mean, there's some cultures that were peacefully supplanted into something new. You know, whether it had to happen that way or not, it did happen that way. It's historically in the record. We know that it happened that way. The real issue is that now we can do it differently. And now we can evolve because a better idea comes along. For example, it didn't take a failure of the telephone company for people to want to buy cell phones. They were simply a better idea. It didn't take a failure of typewriters. We didn't have to have a war over it, that people naturally went to personal computers, because personal computers could do so much more than a typewriter. It was simply a better idea. And so there are ways that humans will go to a better idea when it's proved that, oh, yeah, sure, this is far superior, without a war, without a collapse, without a catastrophe, when something better is presented. And, you know, what we really need to focus on right now in this world is a vision for where we're going. Because without a vision of what we can be, we only have the doomsday scenarios. And, you know, that's very unfortunate, because what we hold in our consciousness is what we create. You know, what we believe is what we create. So if we believe that humanity is on the eve of its birth into adulthood and going through its initiation to wake up into its adulthood to a glorious, glorious future, that's a very different belief than the fact that we're destroying ourselves and the environment and everything is going to hell in a handbasket and we're all going to die. You know, which one would you rather believe?
Neither. Well, no, I mean, I want, you know, I want us to go to a better place. You know, I just keep going back and forth on the fence personally, because I just see where we are allowing ourselves to be led, and I say that definitely led, because we're not making choices. We're not making conscious choices.
Uh-huh. Well, it depends on what we are talking about. More and more individuals are starting to make conscious choices about, you know, everything from eating organic food, which influences the marketplace, to the clothes they buy, to where they work, to what they drive. I mean, individuals are starting to make conscious choices. And it's really going to happen from the ground up. And, you know, granted, the choices on the public level, many of them look pretty scary.
And so you have to understand, see, you live in California where people make those choices, and I live in Texas.
Right, that's quite different, yeah.
Where it, you know, people, you know, they eat cow. You know, I mean, it's definitely a very different energy. It's a much thicker and denser energy.
That's right.
And change happens a lot slower.
Yeah, it does. You know, and that's because more first chakra. It's, you know, the heavier, denser energy is more down at the lower chakras. So that is more stable in some ways and less prone to change. And, you know, the real question then is, how do we get the kind of consciousness that I'm used to in the Bay Area here in California into places that are suspicious of it at best and resistant? And
that would
be so cool. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that we have to not do it with a war or a culture war. We have to understand that we all have common issues and concerns. We're all concerned about survival. We may have different ideas about how to survive. But, you know, people who are hanging on to the old paradigm, it's because that's made them feel safe. That's the only thing they know. And again, if they can see what's a better idea, then they start to change. You know, one example I see is the spread of yoga right now. I've been in the yoga movement since 1975, and when I began, you know, people thought yoga was a fermented dairy food, you know. There were hardly any yoga studios, hardly any classes, and now yoga studios are popping up all over the world, the way churches were in 400 AD, you know? And why? Not because anybody's being browbeat over to do it, but people who practice yoga, if you hang around in that community, you see that they're fit, they're happy, they're conscious, they treat each other well. And, you know, if you went to a party and saw somebody you hadn't seen for 5 years, hey, you look good. What have you been doing? And she says, oh, I've been doing yoga regularly. And you go, oh, well, I want some of what she's having. And that is how change happens. And so, you know, as enough people practice a new paradigm and show that this works, then other people say, oh, well, that looks good. Maybe I'll try it.
And even though this is a little not quite point here, but there are the TV shows, you know, like Ghost Hunter and Medium and Ghost Whisperer that are really opening people up to the whole idea, and I'm going to say of the paranormal, but
right.
Once you open that door, it's not a far cry from meditating and, you know, studying the chakras and being more open to hearing that message, hearing
right.
a different message.
Exactly, exactly. And so there's many, many doors in, and people are just flocking to it, even in Texas.
I know. It's so weird.
Yeah.
I've lived here for 13 years, 14 years,
uh-huh.
and it really has changed just in that amount of time. Actually,
where
I met
are you
someone.
In Texas?
I'm in the Dallas area, which
in
tends
Dallas.
To be a little bit more metropolitan than
yeah,
some
yeah.
other areas.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I met someone the other day that does Christian yoga.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And
yeah.
I was like, well, I didn't know it was denominational, but it's opening the door. I mean, I've heard that yoga was the work of the devil.
Right, sure.
You know, it's that,
that
Eastern
yeah.
stuff, you know,
yeah.
you can't do that. It's that devil stuff. And
yep.
so I think it's interesting how it's moving into different communities that normally would frown upon it or look
yep.
at it as if it was bad.
Right. Yeah. 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 And the fact is, yoga is far older than the devil, because the devil was came about with Christianity, and that's only 2,000 years old, and yoga is, you know, 5,000 years old at least. So it predates the devil.
Mhm.
Yeah.
I have a two-part Jesus question, because you brought up Jesus, and it
mm-hmm.
it brings up an interesting point. So I'll ask you both points, and we'll go, you know, if I need to go back, I will.
Yeah, great.
All right, point number one was it important for Jesus to come when he did? And
mm-hmm.
then part number two is, what if Jesus came today?
Oh, yeah, great question.
Or an avatar, not, you know, it doesn't
yeah,
have to be Jesus,
yeah.
but an avatar.
It doesn't have to be Jesus himself, but someone like him. Well, first of all, was it important that Jesus came when he did? I think absolutely. I think Jesus was, like I say, an avatar or somebody that planted the seed of the heart chakra paradigm that we're going to. And, you know, you could argue whether he existed or whether he's, you know, a myth or whatever. I don't even think that matters. That the ideas that Jesus spread at the time he was preaching were radical, radical ideas at the time. The idea that you could share bread between, you know, Jews and Gentiles. The idea that you could cut across class lines and, you know, Jesus would, you know, help heal lepers and touch the hem of prostitutes. And, you know, he didn't have those divisions. And these, and that you could forgive your someone that trespassed against you, these were absolutely radical ideas at the time. They were as radical as me saying, you know, I'm going to stand up, run down through downtown Dallas with my clothes off and stand on my head, you know. And, you know, he was killed for it. They were so radical. But they were the seeds of the heart chakra, and they started turning humanity in that direction. The early Christian movements, the first 300 years, people came together across class lines, across racial lines. They came together to worship, and they were really calling in a new vision, a new way that we could live in harmony with each other. And so, you know, the teachings of Jesus were extremely important, which is why Christianity has had such a hold. The trouble with it is it's been those teachings have been distorted, that he only got to teach 3 years before he was killed. And, you know, what if he had lived a full long life and his ideas had had time to really be understood? So it got distorted by the Roman Empire and used as a tool of the state, and much of what is really the heart and soul of Christianity is not really understood or practiced today, and that's the trouble with it. So that's the first question.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the second question is, what if Jesus or someone like him came along today? Well, my view is that that kind of archetype has broken into many, many pieces, and it's all through the culture in individuals like you and me, that we are all have Jesus inside us, that we all have the Christ, that we all have Christ consciousness, that we can tap into that, and it doesn't matter whether you call it Christ consciousness or the goddess or awakening divinity or higher consciousness, or, you know, there's so many teachers and healers that have given it different names, but that Christ is coming back among us, only it's not as one person, but it's as many, many people in many different areas, being social architects and talking about a new way. And it's just as radical as he was.
And I think that's interesting, because there's so many people that are waiting for either Jesus to come back or Messiah to come back, or for somebody to take that role.
Yeah. And I think it, you know, in the last chapter of the book, I talk about this. And I say, you know, Jesus was said to die for our sins as individuals, but now we have to wake up and atone for the sins that we have made against the earth and against each other. And we all have to undergo the initiation that Jesus went through. We all have to awaken to divine consciousness, because that's basically what he was preaching, is that humans can be more than they are, that, you know, the kingdom of God is within you, that, you know, we can all wake up to a higher consciousness. That's what he was trying to teach, but it was so foreign to people at the time. But now people are actually discovering it, and they're finding it through many different paths and many different kinds of spiritualities. It's the same thing, you know, whether you do it through yoga and meditation or Buddhism or whatever, it's the same thing that Jesus was talking about.
So one of the things that you... Go ahead.
I'm ready for another question.
Okay. I mean, one of the things that you brought up, which you talk about a lot in the book, is about Christianity. You know, Jesus came, he died, and then what happened inside, and I'll say the church, and I was wondering if you could talk about that a little bit, because I just found it interesting to look at that history.
Well, I actually have two chapters on Christianity. One is early Christianity and the teachings of Jesus and the life of Jesus and what he was trying to get across, which I think is profound and important. And then I talk about the dark side of Christianity and what actually happened historically when it became a tool of the state. And what happened was we went through 1,000 years where we had the least amount of discoveries and innovation and, you know, technological advancement, the least amount of any time in recorded history. And it's because people were so suppressed and so disempowered and so scared, really. And so the dark side was that in the name of Christianity, and this has nothing to do with Jesus' message, you know, hundreds of thousands of people were killed in brutal deaths. You know, Christians, I mean, Protestants and Catholics fighting with each other. You know, the Crusades that went and attacked the whole Muslim and the Jews. And, you know, I mean, the history and the witch burnings that were, you know, the brutal burning to death of women, hundreds of thousands of women who lived in fear of their lives when people came in. I mean, people need to know this dark side as well as the light side, so they can start to separate it out and say, wait a minute, this stuff is not the teaching of Christ. This stuff was humans' distortion for the use of their own power of the teaching of Christ. And it's actually very sacrilegious. If you are a Christian, you would go back to the original teachings of love your brother and turn the other cheek and forgive the sins and love one another and, you know, be one family. Those were the original teachings, and we need those teachings today.
One of the things I find interesting...
Go ahead.
One of the things that I find interesting is that a lot of people, this is going to sound so terrible, but a lot of people really have issues with the Muslim extremists, you know, and they're out to convert everybody using force, although we as a people are Christians or, you know, whatever, went and did the Crusades, they did the Inquisition, and in relationship to your book, could it be that that culture is in a different piece of evolution? Could they be a little bit behind the power curve?
Does that make sense? I mean, I think it just is there to illustrate, just like World War II and the horrendous killing of Jews in Nazi Germany, you know, that's there to illustrate what power can do so that we know and watch out for it. You know, and I think the same thing with the Inquisition and all. It's like, in order to mature from the love of power to the power of love, we need to know both the light side and the dark side of what power can do. We need to be aware of it. We need to keep, you know, Nazi Germany in our historical minds so that we never do that again. And these are gross abuses of power, and power can heal and lead and inspire and create, and power can oppress and destroy and be violent. And we need to understand that it can do both. It's a two-sided sword in order to have the maturity to wield power wisely. And that's part of, you know, we don't give up power to get to the heart. We stand in our power to get to the heart.
And I think a lot of people are really learning to own their power, or trying to own their power.
That's right. And that is a very important step that individuals can take, is to realize that we've lived in a culture that renders people powerless. I call it the submissive paradigm. And that it is incumbent upon each person to do the work to heal their wounds and reclaim their own individual power. Because only then can they stand up and use their power in service of creating a new paradigm. The powerless can't do it.
No, they just are waiting for somebody else to give it to them.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, they're not going to be the ones that make, they're not going to be the change agents.
The music's going to come up here in a second.
Okay. Alrighty.
When we come back, why don't we talk a little bit about the future? We're going to have the mind yoga question after the break.
Okay.
And
all
then
right.
After that, why don't we talk about what you think is going to happen to churches, government, stuff like that with this transition.
Okay.
Sound good?
Good.
All right.
Okay.
I'm Dr. Rita Louise. We're talking to Anodeya Judith about her book, Waking the Global Heart. Her webpage is sacredcenters.com, and we'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Just Energy Radio with your host, Dr. Rita Louise, will return right after these messages.
Deep inside yourself and venture into the realm of the unconscious mind with my Meditating on the Kabbalah guided imagery audio CDs. Discover who you are and what you want in life. Meditating on the Kabbalah can help you to open, clear, and revitalize the energetic pathways of your subtle being. They will support you in your spiritual quest by helping you to access the profound insights and inner guidance you need as you work in alignment with your highest good. Let them help you to release negative thoughts and emotions and clear away any limitations that may be keeping you from experiencing your full potential. Walk down the path to health, healing, understanding, and enlightenment with Meditating on the Kabbalah. Order your copy today at www.soulhealer.com. That's right, that's www.soulhealer.com.
Hi, I'm James Althayanchik, the Black Knight of Talk Radio. Listen to Dr. Rita's Soul Healer Moment live each third Sunday night of the month on Feet to the Fire. www.feettofire.com for more information.
Hi, I'm Dr. Rita Louise, the host of Just Energy Radio and the founder of the Institute of Applied Energetics. Start a new career today on the leading edge of alternative health and healing. The Institute of Applied Energetics can help you develop the specialized skills you need to work as an energy medicine practitioner, intuitive counselor, or professional medical intuitive. Besides our outstanding technical instruction, our programs also support you in creating and building a successful business in this rapidly growing field. Be a catalyst for changing the way healthcare is done around the world. Contact the Institute of Applied Energetics right away or visit AppliedEnergeticsInstitute.com.
And now back to Just Energy Radio with Dr. Rita Louise.
Hello and welcome back to Just Energy Radio. I'm Dr. Rita Louise, and we'll bring Anodea Judith back on after this week's Mind Yoga question, because there's the music. And so this week's Mind Yoga question is this. This term is used in theosophy to describe a compendium of mystical knowledge encoded in a non-physical plane of existence. I'll repeat the question. This term is used in theosophy to describe a compendium of mystical information or mystical knowledge encoded in a non-physical plane of existence. So if you think you know the answer, if you know the answer, if you kind of maybe sort of know the answer, if you're listening to the show in the archive and you think you know the answer, send the answer, or not the right answer, but an answer to justenergyradio@yahoo.com. That's justenergyradio@yahoo.com. Or you can go to the Just Energy Radio website and send it through the comment page on that site. And the first person to send an email with the correct answer will receive a copy of Dr. Shaw's Soul Communication book, Opening Your Spiritual Channels for Success and Fulfillment. Okay, but the people in the chat room, you have to send an email. Okay, so let's get Anodea back on and continue on. Okay, where were we? So before the break, I suggested that we talk about With this shift into this four chakra energy, what's going to happen to the different institutions that we all know and love, like the church, government, as we know it today? Will they still have a place in our life and in our society, or will we find in time that they will just go away?
Well, I think that depends. That I think they can have a place in our society. They have served a very important place in our society, and I think we will always have churches and government, but that they will have to transform how they do things. And if they transform, they'll keep up with the times and will still serve an important role. But if they stay stuck in rigid beliefs in a dynamic and evolving universe that's changing so fast, I mean, we're in a place of such rapid change technologically that it makes your head spin. If they want to stick to the old ways, they are going to get left behind. So it depends on whether, you know, the church can embrace new ideas, is whether government can change and embrace new ideas. And if so, they will still be a central a part of society. If not, something else will form in its place. There could be another form of church or another form of government. I mean, we will always have these things. It just depends on whether it changes from within or it dies and something else takes over. You know, yoga classes are becoming a kind of church, for example, you know?
Well, but, and then there's, like, unity and stuff like that that's...
Absolutely,
you know,
that are doing wonderful, wonderful things and expanding and exploring and keeping the ideas of the church alive, which is where people come together to share the sacred and to share worship and to share the journey to something higher. I mean, I think that's an essential part of human civilization and always will be so. We need that salvation there. But as the world evolves, you know, if the church is going to continue, you know, sexually abusing little boys and making wars on people, then people are going to say, no thanks, I'll have something else instead.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just think that the government has very much maximized on technology and
mm-hmm.
really spur a lot of it on
mm-hmm.
so that they can spy on us. A little paranoid.
a little paranoid. But what's happening is everything is becoming transparent, including the government. You know, not only can we be spied on, but we can spy on them so that you can get the documents of what they're voting on in Congress and you can actually read the whole bill. You know, we didn't have that capacity so easily before. You can just get online and see it now. So people are becoming more informed, and we're actually moving toward the original idea of a democracy, which is a government for the people, by the people, and for the people. It hasn't been that for a long time, but as people get more empowered, it becomes that.
And as people get empowered, they get the opportunity to be who they are.
That's right, exactly.
You know, they get to be authentic.
That's right, that's right. And only by going through that and becoming authentic can we really stand in our power and go to the heart. And true love is between two people who are being authentic. People who are playing roles, then it's just love between the roles, but who are they really, you know? So as we learn to become authentic, we have more authentic love in our relationships. And, of course, that requires better communication skills and ways to work out, well, here's what I want and here's what you want and how do we work that out?
And where we are today, I mean, I can see where this whole process is going to take some time because where we are today, we're taught reading, writing, and arithmetic. We're not taught how to communicate effectively.
We're not
taught how to tap into our emotions, et cetera, et cetera.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. And so we need to be taught those things. We need to get them into our primary school education. And, you know, there's things like nonviolent communication that are around now that are teaching, you know, people are flocking to that to learn, you know, really good ways to communicate their feelings and their needs in functional ways that are effective. You know, these are tools that are now infiltrating the culture and helping us to have better relationships and from an authentic place.
And I think that that's just really important for people to be real.
Mm-hmm.
I think people are noticing the wall that they carry around
mm-hmm.
themselves.
Yeah. And not wanting to be in that wall, not wanting to be separate.
Mm-hmm.
It's lonely in there.
Yeah.
And it's very ego-based. And so another part of moving from third chakra to fourth chakra, we can talk about this with individuals, what can we do, is we need to move from our ego-based, me, me, mine, I want more consciousness, to a more global, well, gosh, if I take, you know, if I take more, there's going to be less for you. I have a saying that says if everybody were pursuing their personal dream, we'd have a collective nightmare. And, you know, that's part of what happens. So part of our maturity, just like a kid, you know, growing up says, oh, okay, I can't take all the last of something and I need to share and I need to think of other people besides myself. That's maturity. And that's what we need to evolve toward.
there was something that you talked about in the book, the Burning Man celebration.
Am I calling
it the right thing?
That's right.
Can you talk about that a second? Because it really fits with what you're just talking about. And I was like, well, you're not talking about a Grateful Dead concert.
No. Yeah. Well, you know, this is a pretty radical thing. It's probably one of the most radical things on the planet. And it's a place in Nevada out in the desert where 40 to 50,000 people come together for a week and build a whole city. And this city is so advanced and sophisticated. It has newspapers and radio stations and transportation and streets laid out, and everybody gets along. And what's so interesting about it is the city functions without money. And, you know, that's a little bit of a, I need to clarify that, because people actually buy a ticket, and the tickets aren't too terribly expensive, to go to this event. So money does go into creating the infrastructure. But once you're there in this city, you go out at night, you don't need your wallet. You want to go get something to eat, you go where there's food. You want to get something to drink, you go where they're serving food. You want to get a ride, you just hop on a bus. Everything is free. And it is all done because people decide to go to the event with, what can I donate? Instead of what can I get, what can I donate? And because everybody goes with the idea of donating something to make it wonderful for other people, the whole event is just absolutely wonderful, and you are entertained and delighted at every moment. And so it shows, you know, one of the things you say, where are we going in the future? This may sound quite radical, but we are little by little going away from, you know, the money system. For example, Wikipedia, which is, you know, everybody goes online, they look up something, and it's the online encyclopedia. That's created by people. Nobody gets paid for working on it. You know, the Creative Commons, the Zipcar, Shareable.net, FreeCycle, these are all these online resources where people are creating things for free, to give away for free. Operating systems, computer operating systems like Linux, were developed by programmers who worked for free in their spare time after their full-time jobs to create something that they knew would never be sold and they'd never get any monetary reward for. And it is, you know, many offices use that as the absolute top-of-the-line operating system. So what we have is a whole subsector of things that are happening where people are doing it because they want to give something, and it's creating value for everybody to share. You know, you can go online to any website for free. You know, some websites sell things.
Well, not any, but there's a lot.
Yeah, but most of them, that's true, not any, but most of them. And, you know, they, many of them sell things, but often they give away a lot of information for free.
Mm-hmm. I've had people suggest that I put a membership thing on my webpage, and I'm like, no.
Mm-hmm.
No, won't do it.
Yeah, you mean for money?
You know, 'cause
yeah.
It just, but it also, what you were talking, you know, it creates that boundary. It creates mm-hmm. that wall between being able to have any kind of relationship with the other people.
Right, right. And, you know, what else is happening is that because there's so many people in the world, it's microeconomies, like iPhone, cell phone applications that sell for a dollar. Well, a dollar, anybody is willing to part with a dollar, but if somebody, you know, sells 10,000 of them, they just made $10,000 at a dollar apiece. So, you know, we're going for free things and things that are almost next to free, you know, that are so little money. And yet, because there's so many of us now, it's such a complex network, people can actually make money on that.
Mm-hmm.
But living without money is still a very long way off. I'm just saying that it's happening in sub-pockets.
But I think, you know, as they say, you know, money is energy, and
right.
that's how we exchange energy at this point in time. But I could see
that
transitioning to, you know, some other form.
Yeah. I spoke earlier of, you know, the largest movement on the history of the planet being this movement of individuals into non-governmental organizations, you know. And most of them are doing that volunteer. They're doing it without getting paid. You know, there are people who work in those organizations and do have, you know, paid jobs to keep it going. But if anything, you know, people are donating money into the organizations. I send money every day to environmental organizations and Democratic organizations and trying to get the right candidates elected. So people are not doing that because they're making money off it. They're doing it because they want to serve. And if they volunteer for those organizations, it's often not because they get paid. It's because they want to do what's right. So money is,
and a
not,
lot of people,
is going to become less and less of a carrot over our heads.
And I think a lot of people have the belief that the only way that they can help is through money as opposed through service.
Yeah. The people who are so busy working, they can donate money, but the people who don't have much money, they can donate time. And both are needed.
Yeah, answer phones, you know, anything. I mean, there's just so much stuff that always needs to be done. Anywhere, everywhere.
Everywhere.
Especially with everything speeding up, not enough time.
Absolutely.
What can we do to help support? I mean, we're talking about this a little bit, but maybe a little more specifically, what can we do to help support the transition, both personally and then globally?
Mm-hmm. Personally, there's many things we can do, and we have to start there. To move from third chakra to fourth chakra, we need to look at our own disempowerment and where we cooperate with that disempowerment. Like you say, people need to find their power. So we need to do that work to find our power, but we need to do it in a way that's not ego-based. I'm not going to find my power so I can have more money and I can have more dominance over everything. I'm going to find my power so I can have the freedom to serve. And, you know, we need to heal the wounds that we've had, because as a therapist, I can tell you that when people have an experience of healing, their heart opens. It just does. It's what happens. So we need to heal the wounds of our heart. We need to practice nonviolence to ourselves, to each other, and as nations. We need to evolve to kind of a higher frequency, if you will, from that deep density to kind of maybe eating a little higher on the food chain. We don't have to be purist about it, but eating higher in the food chain, a little more towards vegetarian, maybe a little less meat, and a little more meditation, a little more quiet, a little more contemplation. These are practices that were handed down by our ancestors to help us mature. And so the more we adopt those practices, the more we start to mature into a less ego-based, more service-based kind of consciousness. We can try and go green as much as possible, you know, turn off our lights and buy things with less packaging, and, you know, eat more organic, support organizations and products that have an environmental consciousness. You know, that's just voting with our dollar. We can spend time in nature because our nervous systems were geared for being in nature. And when we get out in nature, it kind of resets the dials. We feel right again. And then we remember what it's all about. So, you know, just being in contact with nature, go backpacking, go camping, go, you know, hiking. Just get out in nature and remember what's real, not just this computer screen, but the trees and the air and the sunshine. You know, we can practice ways to bring about peace and forgiveness and not be so hard on everybody. Everybody's fighting a hard battle. We need to work together. Do more collaboration and less competition. More forgiving and less criticizing, more helping and less, you know, oppressing. These are all things that we can do in our families, in our relationships, in our workplace, and we can recycle and we can, you know, buy green and turn off our lights, and, you know, all these things, buy a hybrid car and be informed, pay attention to the news or get online and get some real news. These are all things we can do as citizens to grow up. Basically, whatever helps us mature out of our adolescence to our adulthood helps us get through the transition, through the initiation, from the love of power to the power of love.
And listen to shows like this and become
and
more informed
shows
that
like
way.
This. That's right. And there are many of them that are about consciousness and, you know, where we're going, and but, you know, there's many, because there's so much interest in it, people are waking up to that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Any advice on how to deal with, I'm going to say, the power struggle mm-hmm. that's going on in society right now?
Yeah. I would say my advice is don't take part in it. I have a story that I tell at the beginning of the book that is about how the caterpillar turns into a butterfly. Do you remember reading that part?
Yeah, that's a great story.
So when the caterpillar, and the caterpillar will eat several times its weight, you know, it does that about five times, bursting its skin and then growing again, and it's a consumer. And right now in the culture, we're called consumers. And what happens when the caterpillar does this till it gets too bloated to move is then the chrysalis forms around it and curtails its freedom, and the caterpillar hangs upside down. Inside the caterpillar body, a tiny miracle occurs, and that is that these cells that biologists call imaginal cells begin to spontaneously appear in the caterpillar body, and they're so different from the caterpillar that the caterpillar's immune system attacks them. Well, we know that today new ideas in science and spirituality and medicine and in politics, they get attacked by the powers that be, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this has been happening a long time, and yet these imaginal cells continue to appear anyway. Even though they're getting attacked, they appear in greater and greater numbers. And as they do, they don't attack the caterpillar. They don't go to war with the caterpillar. They just get better organized. There's more of them, and they start to recognize each other and say, oh, well, you're an imaginal cell, and let's have a conversation, and let's go out to dinner together, and let's form an organization, and let's do something. And these imaginal cells simply get stronger and stronger. Then the caterpillar's immune system no longer attacks them and becomes a nutritious soup for the imaginal cells that turn into the butterfly. So the new order does not need to fight the old order. That's a waste of time, and that is returning to the old paradigm. The new order just needs to find other people of like mind or like heart, like I say, like-hearted people, and join together with them and say, what can we do together? Whether it's hanging out and having fun or forming an organization or marching down the street or serving the homeless, you know, find people of like mind, and, you know, the more that gets built, the better it looks, and the more people will say, hey, I want what they're having. We don't have to go to fight. We don't have to resist. We just have to build something better. That's our challenge, to build a better mousetrap.
And what's interesting is that it's the people making the conscious choice to do it, versus where it was before, where there was government and organization making the choices for us.
Precisely. That it's no longer passive, that somebody else will do it, but active. And that's why we have the word activism in the vernacular today. That it's active. We actively make the choice, and we don't wait for somebody to do it. We go from seeing outer power as the authority to inner power as the authority.
And so this change might happen in a very organic, coming from the inside, where people don't even really realize what's going on until, boom, it's different.
Yep, that's right. And
that's a really cool image.
Yeah, that may be the 2012 point, you know, that this has been going on underground and gaining steam and gaining interest and gaining numbers for, you know, quite some time, and the news isn't giving it any mind. They don't see it's important. And all of a sudden it's going to pop up full grown, and none too soon, because the other is collapsing.
Well, that would be interesting. The whole thing with 2012, I find really interesting, because there's going to be this whole chunk of the population that are so tied to the apocalyptic, you know, Planet X, meteor, you know, the pole's going to turn upside down, that if something cataclysmic doesn't happen, they're going to go, it was a bunch of crap.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, people had that about the turn to 2000, too. Remember, what was it called?
Mm-hmm.
They thought the computers
Y2K.
Y2K, right. They thought computers were going to bring the end of the world because they weren't programmed to go to 000, you know, and nothing happened. So I think these changes are very gradual, and it may only be historians that look back and say, yeah, 2012 was a shift point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when Y2K happened, I watched TV really early in the morning to see New Year's in some different, you know, because it was big, and there was all kinds of New Year broadcasts. Like every hour they had a different New Year celebration in some other part of the country or the world. And I'm like, well, they still have lights.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
So I guess I don't need to go run down and buy a bunch of water and stuff.
Exactly. So I think it's more of a gradual thing. It's sort of like a birthday. You know, you have a birthday and you get another year older, but you're only a day older than you were the day before. It's just a number, you know. And yet, as we go through, we go, oh, yeah, you know, the 20s were one thing and the 30s were another and the, you know, each year is different, but it's not that you're so different the day before your birthday as you are the day after.
Any thoughts on a timeline where you think, you know, how long it's going to take us to move into this new energy?
I think we're moving into it rapidly, and I think we are going to see it in our lifetimes because the people that are alive today, if they're not going to change the world, the future will not exist for humanity in any way that we want to see it. So we are the ones changing it, and so I think we're going to see some of it in our lifetime. And then, of course, the result on down the line of that, we won't see. But it's so hard to predict because technology is just proceeding at such a pace that 10 years ago, I mean, we didn't have, you know, the iPhones, we didn't know what they could do. I mean, there's so many things that are coming up that are unexpected that it's really, we're entering an unknown zone. And we have to be happy with that. We have to hold our vision of what's possible and be flexible and ride with changes of the times, because no matter how much we plan, we're going to be surprised.
And I think where the energy on the planet has been has really been lining people up to be more in the moment, go with the flow, because there's just been so many changes happening all the time that they kind of have no choice, and we're getting a lot of practice.
Yep. When systems are changing, you know, the resilient systems are one that have a lot of flexibility. The ones that are very rigid are going to get left behind.
Yay. Yeah. So the music's going to come up here in a second.
Okay.
If somebody wanted to get more information about, well, I'm going to assume, you know, Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, your local bookstore will all have a copy of this book, plus the other two books that we talked about at the beginning of the show, Wheels of Life and Eastern Body, Western Mind, all great books. I highly recommend them. But if they want to find out about lectures, classes,
They can go to my website, sacredcenters.com, and hit Global Transformation or Awaken the Global Heart, and they will find, you know, places where I'm giving talks. We have a small conference on it coming up in September in Philadelphia. I'm giving a keynote in St. Louis in September on this subject. And there's videos to download on the website that are free and all kinds of articles.
Excellent. And Adaya, thank you, thank you, thank you for coming on the show. You don't know
thank
how much
you,
I appreciate
Rita.
It.
Oh, I appreciate it too. Great conversation.
All right. All right. Thank you.
Bye
bye. That was Adaya Judith, her book, Waking the Global Heart. Her website is sacredcenters.com. And next week, we're going to be speaking with Christian DeQuincy about the nature of reality, and our good friend Marie D. Jones about her new book, The Deja Vu Enigma. So, until next week, I'm Dr. Rita Louise. Be blessed.
Join host Dr. Rita Louise each week at this time for Just Energy Radio. Point your browser to www.justenergyradio.com.